Senate Revenue Committee to order this morning. The chair's given me the gavel, at least temporarily this morning. We have three bills scheduled for work session, and we'll just go down order of way they're listed, and we'll start with Senate Bill 171B. Paul.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 171 is the bill that the committee has worked over recent weeks. It is based on the recommendations from the Public Utility Commission, and the main element was the requirement that public utilities not file consolidated tax returns. My understanding is there are some significant changes planned for that, but we don't have those amendments yet. Senator Metzger is working on.
Yeah, that's correct. Senator Starr, we have dealt with that issue in business yesterday in a different manner through the rate setting process, and so we won't be dealing with that issue here. And the amendments that Mr. Warner has talked about is that we're going to go back to the original 171 bill, which is unrelated to our other discussion dealing with modifying the definition of cogeneration plants and adding simply the net benefit standard for acquisition of public utilities that was a part of the original bill. And those will be the only elements that we'll deal with in 171 here. And those should be ready by later today or tomorrow.
Has the bill been, or can we schedule that for tomorrow?
Mr. Chair, I posted it for Friday on Friday's agenda. We just posted for 8:30 on Friday, and that's on the list.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes,
if I could, just for a moment, I'd like to introduce Chris Higgins from Oregon State University, who was a job shadowing me today. And Chris headed up the OSU team that evaluated the bridge program that we have with the state that helped determine how we could save money on the bridge rebuilding projects, and it's going to save us a lot of money and get a lot more bridges done. And he headed that team, and he's with me today, and so he's joining us today to kind of watch how we work up here, and hopefully have some suggestions of how we can streamline other parts of government.
Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Appreciate having you join us today.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
When Senator Shields took our committee down there and we went out and toured that facility, we looked at, you know, not only the tsunami but also this. And when you look and you recognize the stress they were putting on those beams, it's kind of like where we are, though, right now.
Ah. All right. Well,
with that part.
If no other comments on 171, it's... is posted for Friday, and so we'll be looking at the new amendments on Friday, and appreciate that information. With that, we're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 171, open a work session on House Bill 2452. Good
morning.
Good morning.
Chairman Starr and committee members. This morning you have before you House Bill 2452, and we've heard this before. It's the Department of Revenue bill, and there were some concerns from the bankers in the last time we heard this bill. But basically what it's doing is providing guidelines for allowing pass-through entities to file a composite personal income or corporate excise tax return with the Department of Revenue on behalf of non-resident owners who choose to be part of this composite return. It specifies that the composite income tax return must include at least one non-residential owner, and then it outlines the components of the composite income tax return such as the share of the distributive income from Oregon sources of each electing owner and the amount of tax that is withheld by the pass-through entity for each electing owner. It allows an electing owner to file a non-resident personal income tax or corporate excise tax return for the tax year in which the owner was part of the composite tax return and be given credit for any tax paid on his or her behalf by the pass-through entity. And then the new part, though, is that it's outlining the conditions under which a pass-through entity shall withhold income taxes for non-resident owners' distributive income. And it requires then the pass-through entities to withhold taxes on distributive income from non-resident owners if the owners are not electing to be part of that composite tax return. So that's really was the source of the controversy, is when you were going to be requiring these non-resident owners to have tax is withheld. And then it's providing that you have to have at least one non-resident owner with a distributive share of income in excess of $1,000. It outlines other conditions under which a pass-through entity is not required to withhold taxes on behalf of non-residents. It applies to tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2006, and it basically repeals one section of law that will be deleted. Now, Department of Revenue and the bankers have been having discussions in particular about different types of trusts and having some the grantor trusts excluded. And I think there's an amendment somewhere to this bill on House Bill 2452, but we haven't quite located it yet. I know. Sorry, but it's out there. And it's been distributed, I guess, but not to us. So, someone has it. Anyway, so we'll try to get that amendment soon. I don't know if it's within, this committee meeting or not, but supposedly that was an agreement with the Department of Revenue and the bankers. And just so everyone's clear, this is Department of Revenue. When I first initially did this revenue impact statement, I had minimal on there as far as the revenue, additional revenue that would be generated. But the Department of Revenue has kind of looked at and scanned through some of their trust returns and just kind of looked at those in a little more detail. And, they did find that this could be a bigger issue for some of these non-resident owners to the tune of about $200,000 in taxes, penalties, and interest that may be evaded right now that the Department of Revenue has identified. So it is something that with this amendment, I think what they have and you can hear testimony maybe to the amendment and what they all agreed to, but it was to carve out some provisions so certain trusts did not have to have their taxes withheld, which is what would be required by this bill.
Comments?
And the Department of Revenue and bankers are here. So.
Side by side, I see.
Yeah.
Well, you want to come up and tell us a little more about what you're working on, please?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Tim Martinez here on behalf of the Oregon Bankers Association. Yeah, the question we raised was the issue of trusts, how trusts were going to be treated under this bill. We certainly appreciate the Department of Revenue's willingness to work with us as we tried to figure out where we were going on this. And they were very clear from day one that they did not see certain kinds of trust as a problem, as an issue that they were trying to address in this bill. So we asked for a carve-out to take trusts out of it. And the language that have agreed upon, and I'm told by legislative counsel that Senator Deckert's office did pick up that amendment because he was the one that made the request. And I'm happy after you're done grilling me to run up to Senator Deckert's office and see if we can track that down. But basically amendment says is that trusts are not included under this bill unless the Department of Revenue, through rules, believes that it is a trust that's set up simply to avoid taxes. And again, I appreciate Department of Revenue working with us. We worked with Ms. Harchenko and our counsel to come up with the language.
Thank you. So, all trusts will be removed except potential circumstance where a trust has been established to avoid tax. Is that
what I'm...
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue. Mr. Chairman, the amendment does refer to ORS 128.005 trust as defined there. And I think it is somewhat limited in the category of trusts that are carved out. Business trusts, for example, would still be included in the provisions.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
So, Mr. Chairman, we do appreciate the opportunity to work with them on this. We do still have some concerns. The bill that came to you originally was coming from a multi-state tax commission uniformity recommendation. So we're a member of that. This is a proposal that they recommended to the states, and we brought that forward. We recognize that there are some concerns with the trust, and we're happy to work with them. We are concerned about the potential for revenue loss. As Mr. Martinez mentioned, we've been looking at the issue, and staff talked about the potential revenue losses. One reason the Multi-State Tax Commission recommended the withholding is that states have seen revenue losses from these pass-through entities sending income to out-of-state beneficiaries. So we are concerned about that. I think what we plan to do is work with the industry during the interim to see if we can develop a proposal to bring back to you in the 07 session that they would be agreeable to, that we think might help address those concerns and deal with it in that manner. So we're agreeable to the amendment and plan to continue to work on that.
Thank you. Questions? Appreciate the work you're doing. And
Mr. Chairman, I'll go try to track down the amendment.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Martinez. Any comments? No questions. We're going to close this work session on House Bill 2452, and we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 315.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 315, the committee has heard before. It is actually heard on March 31st. And what it does is it's relating to the streamlined sales tax agreement that the states had developed. It comes to you from Senator Gordley, who is here. One thing I wanted to make sure the committee is aware is in Section 5 of the bill, it is important to recognize that by adopting this legislation, you would not be invalidating or amending any provision of the state, and adoption of the agreement by the state does not amend or modify any law of the state. So this is actually, in terms of the process that's been set up by the states, it is the first step in that process. And you can see by the handout, the number of states that have enacted compliance legislation, those that are considering it now, and those that are implementing. There has been some issues around destination rules for sales that have come up, and some of the states have asked for an extension beyond the time in which the agreement was supposed to fully be in place. So that's kind of where it is at this point, but they have basically the states that were required to implement the agreement have enacted the legislation. The issues that you kind of had after the public hearing were, first of all, a fiscal issue with the Department of Revenue, and Deborah can speak to that if there's any fiscal implications. And the second issue that's come up since this time, and probably worthy of some discussion, is there are some guidelines within the agreement for local sales taxes. And, of course, we've had a proposal now in Gresham to impose a local sales tax. We had, you recall, a vote in Ontario in November that was defeated for a local sales tax. So that may be another issue to think about as you look at this issue, the possibility we'll have some local sales taxes in Oregon.
Wood Village, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Further comments from the committee? Senator Gordon, please come up. And Sean?
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Abel Gordley, representing Senate District 23 in Portland. And with me this morning, let me say, first of all, I appreciate very much that we are in work session on Senate Bill 315. And I want to defer any questions or comments that you may have to my good legislative aide, Sean Cruz, who brought this concept forward to me last session, and who in fact did all the background and research on the measure that we introduced in the 03 session. And Sean has continued to keep this in front of me, and we've attempted to keep the issue alive and in front of all of you, given that there is an opportunity here for Oregon to finally participate in an agreement that is we don't want to be left out. I'll put it that way. Sean, do you want to refer to the document that's before the committee this morning? This is some additional research from the National Conference of State Legislatures.
Sure. Chair Starr, members of the committee, thank you. I passed out two items here that are stapled together just for your information.
We need you to introduce yourself.
Oh, I'm Sean Cruz, for the record, Senator Gordley's legislative aide. Thank you. The first page, this is information I downloaded from the NCSL, National Conference of State Legislators site yesterday. It's as recent as I could get it. The first page is just a list of 16 amendments or motions to amend various parts of the streamlined sales and use tax agreement. And the reason I put that there is just so that you can see that the states are very active in modifying the agreement as time goes on. It's very complex. There's about 7,000 local and state sales taxing jurisdictions nationwide, and the states that rely on sales tax for their revenue are moving forward very ambitiously to get their states in alignment with the agreement, which fundamentally changes that picture to one tax rate per state and only one collecting authority, only one place that a vendor has to actually remit the sales taxes that they collect. And as was brought forward in the hearing that we had on this bill, there are a number of Oregon companies that are already collecting sales taxes for sales in other states because they have a physical presence there, and remitting those amounts to the appropriate authorities. What the streamlining agreement will do is will eliminate a lot of the complexity of that. But you can imagine, as this process goes forward and you have a state like Colorado with more than 40 local sales taxing jurisdictions, and each one of those is a dedicated revenue source to something, that the tax reform that they're undertaking there is significant. And so we brought this forward here so you'd have a picture of that. Then on the pages that are following in this handout is a status report for every state. And even Oregon is listed here. There are two bills, one on the House side and this bill that's before you today. So it's being tracked. And what we want to suggest is that, particularly as you see that local jurisdictions are taking some initiative in enacting local sales taxes or attempting to, without the guidelines that the streamlining sales tax and use agreement puts out there, then Oregon we're actually in the process of balkanizing the state, which is what the rest of the nation is trying to eliminate. And that is the reason that we bring this forward today and for your consideration.
Questions? Senator George.
Thanks. Amnesty, I'm reading the streamlining piece right here, outline of the streamlining sales tax. It says amnesty for participating voluntary sellers. Who would that person be, and why would they need amnesty?
Oh. Chair Starr, Senator George, excellent question. I don't have the answer to. Maybe Mr. Warner might be able to provide some more technical information.
Senator George, I'm not sure of the specifics. I think it probably is an incentive if there's been any issues in terms of sellers that have violated the agreement or violated state nexus laws in the past and not collected taxes, that there would be an amnesty if they come into the agreement as a voluntary. In other words, there wouldn't be any charges pressed against them for previous actions. So right now, my understanding of the agreement is that the interstate sellers are participating strictly on a voluntary basis. So that's probably just an additional incentive for them to come in on a voluntary basis.
A follow-up question, Mr. Chair.
Yes,
probably they're addressing to Paul then. Paul, currently, with this, let me just ask the question this way. Would this eliminate any positive incentive for a person to locate, let's say, for example, internet sales in Oregon, because of the status that we have with the sales tax? Would this negatively impact them?
The agreement would be, if it's fully implemented, and either through the states acting together or through some federal legislation, it could potentially, over time, it could eliminate the advantage of operating in Oregon, a non-sales tax state, and just having your nexus here.
Right.
And that would be true of all interstate sales. I think the idea is to try to bring some uniformity between, you know, in-state sellers versus out-of-state. So potentially, yes, it could reduce that competitive advantage that companies in Oregon have enjoyed.
Thanks.
Further questions?
Chair Starr, if I might add to that, I didn't have a chance to make copies of this information, but also from the NCSL site, it says that established brick-and-mortar stores like Borders and Walmart are increasingly selling their goods online, transforming the whole notion of retailing by catering their business to tech-savvy consumers. They credit today's e-commerce boom with traditional Main Street stores' effective use of the Internet rather than web-only retailers like Pets.com. With the exception of online sellers, Amazon.com and eBay, the study says, the majority of online sales are by the same retailers that dominate offline sales.
Interesting. Department of Revenue, want to weigh in on this? Yes, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue. Mr. Chairman, I have a handout coming to you that is an executive summary from April 2004, just briefly describing the streamlined sales tax project. And what I wanted to speak to was on page 3 of this analysis, because I personally had just a little bit of trouble, I guess, figuring out how we would make this work, because we don't currently have a sales tax, as you know. But as Mr. Cruz described this, the first step in this process is to adopt enabling legislation, which is referred to as the Uniform Sales and Use Tax Administration Act, which really is Senate Bill 315 that you have before you now. So that is the first step in the process. It does direct the Department of Revenue to enter into the agreement the streamlined sales and use tax agreement. However, in order to participate in the agreement, you need to be in compliance with all of its provisions, and then a certificate of compliance documents each state's compliance with the provisions. It cites applicable statutes, rules, or regulations or other authorities supporting such compliance. So my understanding is that in order to actually be a participant in the agreement, we would need to have enacted a sales tax. Now, if I'm wrong on that, I'm sure I'll be corrected, but I don't see a timeline specified in the bill, although it does direct us to enter into the agreement. So my understanding of how this would work is that we would monitor the streamlined sales tax project. We would track that as it progresses. And if a sales tax is implemented in the state, either by legislation or initiative of the voters, then we would work to analyze that and make sure it conforms to the provisions of the streamlined sales tax agreement. Without direction from the legislature, I don't anticipate that there would be a fiscal impact from that monitoring process. So again, we would watch to see what's happening with the project, and if there is a sales tax that is enacted in the state, we would provide advice to whether or not that conforms to the agreement provisions.
Senator George.
Question. I'm still continuing to read this essay on this concept. It says smaller companies are concerned about the cost of software that would be needed to calculate this tax. These are talking about internet providers. And then it says that that they're also concerned about the potential of loss of tax competition amongst the states. In other words, an advantage like, for example, Oregon would have if we, in fact, can have the nexus. Our advantage would then be gone. We would be collecting for everyone else, and there would be little or no advantage to being in Oregon as far as the location for your business. Do you see it that way also?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Starr, if the result of the streamlined sales tax project is that companies in a state can be compelled to collect on remote sales, then if there is an advantage to not having that provision exist and it goes away, then the advantage would go away as well, I assume.
But the question, the complexity of it, in other words, we would have smaller businesses, and many, many businesses have been generated by using internet sales. I mean, I know very, very small operations that a good portion of their income today is doing internet sales. And so, but they would be required to buy software and make a system work in which they could analyze and calculate the taxes for each one of these things and then remit it through a state system that they currently are not required to do. So it would be a cost to them, according to the article.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Starr, I'm sorry, Senator George.
Oh, we have glasses.
I beg your pardon. My recollection is that there is a threshold below which smaller retailers would not be required to collect on remote sales. My recollection is it's $500,000, but I could be mistaken on that. The second point is that there are third-party vendors that businesses can use to make these collections and remittances. So I don't believe they would be required to invest in substantial amounts of software, but they would be able to use those third-party
Mr. Chairman, they would be paying a fee in order to get that third-party service.
The last I saw, Mr. Chairman, Senator George, that was a question that was still being debated as to the cost that could be collected from the retailers, and there was an attempt to keep that cost either non-existent or minimal. That was one of the issues that was part of the project.
Thank you.
Further question? Chair has a question. This does not involve State Farm revenue in collection or dispersing of the taxes that are required of vendors from this state.
Mr. Chairman, currently, because there is no statewide sales tax, general sales tax, the Department of Revenue is not involved. If a company now is required to collect a sales tax, actually it would be a use tax, on a sale to an out-of-state resident because the business has a location in that other state, That does not involve the Department of Revenue. The business collects the tax from that out-of-state resident, remits it to the state where that person resides, and the Department of Revenue is not involved.
A further question. Paul tells us, or I think maybe it was in our bill summary, that this does not change Oregon's laws as affecting taxation in the state. Mm-hmm. That correct reading of the bill?
Mr. Chairman, that would be my understanding, yes.
Further questions?
Mr. Chair, we have some additional responses to concerns raised by the Department of Revenue.
Yes, Sean.
Sure, Senator Starr, members of the committee. The streamlining agreement does not require a state to enact any kind of a general sales tax. And most of the provisions of the agreement itself are voluntary. The states can. It's not going to create a uniform sales tax system or revenue system that's nationwide or involving the 45 states that do have general sales taxes. Much of the agreement is an agreement on definitions. I described this in the session, the hearing that we had before, where, for instance, a Twix bar is used as the example. In some states, it's regarded as a food because it contains flour, and others it's regarded as a candy. And in some states, it's candy is subject to the sales tax, in other states it's not. And something as simple as a Twix bar can be that complicated where the taxing scheme is different in every state. So the agreement, much of that agreement is just to come to a common understanding of what the definitions are. And what we don't have, well, and also to answer a second question, is that there is a Supreme Court has an absolute bar on the collection of sales taxes if you do not have a physical presence in the state in which the sale is occurring. So to answer Senator George's question, there is no burden on those small companies here in Oregon that do their business exclusively online. That picture will probably change once the streamlining agreement is fully enacted by all the states. There's 42 states that are actively working on enacting it right now. And the reason that they want to enact it is to remove that bar. So eventually that bar will go away. This first handout shows is that it's a process that's going forward, and the only way that the state of Oregon is finding out about it is to download information from the NCSL after it happens. And what we would like to see, the purpose of this legislation, is that Oregon actually has a seat at the table to understand what the rest of the nation is going on and see where there might be advantages for the state. The department all testified in the previous hearing that there would be an advantage for the companies, Oregon companies, that are already collecting sales taxes and remitting them to other states.
Thanks, Sean. Any further questions? Committee members.
Mr. Chair, if I may say in closing, for our part, were it not for the initiative, insight, hard work of Mr. Cruz, this measure would not be before you today. And again, I want to acknowledge and honor his hard work on the measure before you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. I believe that we will hold this until we have our regular chair back in position, and my sense is that he wants to move it, and likely we'll do that since I'm acting chair kind of at the last minute, I'm not going to move it today.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Metzger.
Could we ask Mr. Craven to come forward, because he was obviously interested in this issue, and Intel is a company that does have a lot of sales. I was just curious, if an international company's perspective, who has a lot of...
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Just to see...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jim Craven representing the American Electronics Association. We at the federal level with our tax staff in Washington, D.C. have participated in these discussions for several years and are tracking the issue. It's not been as burning of a concern being a non-sales tax state, so I'm not as much of an expert as I probably would be if I was in a sales tax state. But I just really want to echo that I think, to my best understanding, everything you just heard is correct and accurate. The key issue about, and Senator George raised a very key issue, would somehow participating in this be a negative for an Oregon-based e-tailer? And I think the answer is no. There's nothing in this. Obviously, we don't have a sales tax in Oregon. There are companies in Oregon who sell to consumers in other states who do have to collect sales tax. And that comes back to that old issue of whether they have nexus in that state. If you're just a pure play located in Hillsboro, Oregon, you're selling apple pies on the internet, and you're only in Oregon, you can't be compelled to collect other people's sales taxes before or after we did something in this bill. The key issue in the multi-state agreement was to put enough pressure on Congress ultimately to change the Supreme Court's Quill decision. And the Quill decision says that one state cannot compel a seller from another state to collect its sales tax unless it has substantial business activity in the destination state. The idea of just going to Congress and saying, and Supreme Court said, that's the rules, and they invited Congress to change the rules if they thought it was appropriate. They didn't say there was a constitutional ban of fixing that. They said under current constitutional rules, that's the way it is, unless Congress acted to change that. And this is, you know, you dial back 5 or 6 years ago, and you say Congress, asking Congress to just say, yeah, every state can require every seller who sells into their state to collect their taxes. And Congress is just not too interested in that. So the states are getting together to say, what if we made it rational? What if we made it reasonable? What if we made it one rate? What if we made it easier? If we did all that, Congress, would you think of overturning the Supreme Court's decision and allowing it to happen? So that's really what this is about. And Sean's comment about, for an Oregon retailer who sells on the internet to another state and currently has to collect taxes, maybe they have a plant in that state or a facility, this would only be helpful to them by rationalizing the current process. The end goal, I mean, I think is to be fair, the end goal is to convince Congress to actually make it required for one state to be able to compel another state. That's not currently the rule. I think that's probably a ways off. But this whole multi-state sales tax initiative is to try to say, if it wasn't a huge burden, Congress, would you considering making this happen? So that's a ways down the road. Even if that doesn't happen, the multi-state sales tax project is beneficial, because a lot of companies today are either voluntarily collecting sales tax in destination states or have to, and this will make it easier for them to do so. So I don't know. I hope that helps a little bit. You know, again, Oregon's participation will be essentially minimal, as Deborah Buchanan pointed out, because this is really a set of states who have sales taxes agreeing to do business a little better way. I think our role will be to participate, to monitor, to prepare for the day when you all enact a sales tax here in Oregon, and we'll be ready for it.
Senator George.
Boy, am I glad to get that on record, because that's what I believe is happening here. Or the National Taxpayers Union is very antagonistic to this plan, and that means to me that they believe that this is, in fact, going to be additional taxes on the taxpayers of the United States of America. And I think that, do you have any response as to why they would do this? I'm sure Citizens for a Sound Economy or Freedom Works or those people will probably be in the same position, because Congress, I believe, took that action for the purpose of allowing a new industry to begin and to grow and to prosper. And I believe that we're still in that growth cycle, and I would hate to have this happen. That's not a question at all. That's just a comment.
Thank you. And thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Paul, is there any problem with the reopening now that we have an amendment on this? Or
still in the work session on 315.
I understand that. We're going to close that work session on. Well, shouldn't have done that. I tap that back in, and Chair, if you would like to move the Senate Bill 315, I deferred to your judgment on that. I think we've heard the testimony on it. I'm going to be opposing it.
So now, once we, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Once we close the work session, can we reopen? We can reopen.
We're still in session.
Well, my position on 315 is I'd be interested to move the bill, but obviously it's where the committee finds itself in terms of votes. I got two and two. Senator Brzezinski, I'm for it. We can hold it over till.
I'd like to talk to Senator Gordley and Mr. Cruz as to.
Let's reopen.
Okay, so we'll repost the bill. We'll hold off today and keep it in our lexicon, Sean. And Senator Gordley, I'm sorry I missed your testimony. I had a bill up next door and another one coming. But thank you, and we'll continue to talk about this issue.
We can come back to 2452 if you want.
Okay, so do you want open a work session on House Bill 2452? Lizbeth.
Chairman Deckard, initially we discussed 2452, but we didn't have the amendment, and we've now located the amendment.
Okay.
So it's -A3, and this is the compromise between the Department of Revenue and the Bankers Association, and you can see it's pretty clear here. What they're doing is basically allowing a pass-through entity does not include certain trusts, and those are the grantor trusts at Department of Revenue, so it's not all trusts, it's just certain trusts as defined in ORS 128.005. And then any other trust that the Department of Revenue has determined by rule to have established or maintained primarily for tax avoidance purposes. So if they're setting up the trust just to avoid paying on that distributive income from the S corporations and these trusts, this distributive income of the non-resident, that's what basically we're talking about. And the bill, again, would require withholding taxes on the distributive income from non-resident owners. It's the owners are not electing to be part of a composite tax return, and that's the big policy change that you're making here in House Bill 2452. And this -A3 just carves out certain trusts as not being subject to this change.
Mr. Chair.
Great. Yes, Senator Starr.
I believe that this continues to be a work in progress, but I think that there's agreement on the amendment, and I would move that we adopt the A3 amendments to House Bill 2452.
Senator Starr has moved the A3 amendments to House Bill 2452. Mr. Martinez and Mr. Buchanan, I missed your testimony. Everyone's nodding. Senator Dorsey.
Question. My understanding is A3 does have a negative revenue impact.
Well, Senator George, it's going to make it just like current law. I mean, these trusts are basically not going to be subject to this bill.
Okay.
So, I mean, basically they won't be requiring to withhold taxes. But that's also, I think, why the Department of Revenue was talking about having a work group in the interim to really see if they can get at some of the compliance issues with certain trusts. And I'm not saying it's the grantor trust per se, the ones that are exempt, but just in general, you know, get at this compliance issue. And so maybe not make all of them subject to House Bill 2552 right now.
So, but you are comfortable moving forward at
yes.
this point, Senator Starr. Great. 2452 has been moved to the Senate floor with the...
No, just the 8-3.
The 8-3s to 2452 have been moved into the bill. Any discussion on that? Any objections? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 2452 as amended to the Senate floor with the repass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved the amended version of House Bill 2452 to the floor with the due-pass recommendation. Comments? Any objection to that motion? So ordered. Who wants to... Tim, you want to carry that bill on the... we'll grant it. Anyone? Any Senator Starr? Moved his pinky and I saw it, so he will carry 2452. With that, we are closed work session and we are adjourned until tomorrow.